Up next, I will be talking with Dave about Star Trek.
Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine is the third Star Trek that first aired in the early to mid 90s, and it takes place on a space station, and it is a bit more of an experimental format for the show because it doesn't take place on a ship. The episode I'd like to talk about today is called Bar Association. It's listed as episode 16 of season 4, though if you go looking for it on Netflix, it'll show up as season 15 and for some reason be labeled Bar Associate. And I'm joined here by Dave, a local labor activist, KABU listener, and...
Nerd extraordinaire.
Nerd extraordinaire. To talk to you about this episode because it involves a number of really interesting things. It involves unions, on the one hand. I have called this the union episode of Star Trek. I don't know of any other episode that actually deals with labor in these explicit terms. We wanted to give you enough context that you might go and watch the episode. If not... tune into the whole show, which is really interesting for the way it deals with identity politics. But Dave, I was wondering whether you could lay out some of the main plot points for this episode, and specific to the story we want to focus on.
Okay. Essentially in the story, what happens is it starts off with at this space station, there is a bar, and the bar is run by a Ferengi, which is a type of alien in the Star Trek universe. They're very concerned with profit.
And
commerce in general. Yeah, there's a lot of dimensions to them. But essentially, the main tension in the episode rests between the owner of the bar named Quark, played by Armin Sherman.
Yeah, Armin Sherman, who was also the principal in Buffy.
The tension exists between him and his younger brother, Rom, who works at the bar with him and is kind of his subservient little brother. And Rom is the employee of Quark, and it leads to a labor conflict, which is very interesting in Star Trek, which is notorious for skirting issues like labor by kind of figuring them out through the mechanics of science fiction. Like, there's no need for money in the Federation, which is what you're most familiar with Star Trek. That's one reason why I like Deep Space Nine so much, is because it's like a laboratory almost. They can do a lot with it, not only because it's science fiction, but because within the science fiction world that it inhabits – you can just do more. There's more races. There's more diversity on this iteration of Star Trek than there ever were in any of the other ones.
Yeah, so the Ferengi are notorious for essentially being these capitalist avatars. I don't think that Roddenberry actually came up with them himself. They go back to the Next Generation, where they show up at least a few times. They're grotesque and misogynistic and chauvinist, and they're also trollish looking, and they have these very pronounced ears, which apparently are erogenous zones, and they, being these large body parts, have complicated health needs. And Rom one day gets an infection that he got because he didn't have time with all the work that he was doing to actually go get his regular checkup. And even when he does come to work sick and collapses, his brother, aka his boss in that situation, just says, "Hey, I'm going to dock him his pay for what he broke." But this instigates a conversation with the ship's doctor named Bashir, who, you know, suggests that he should start a union. You know,
yeah, he very much just kind of as an aside brings it up, not thinking of the consequences of talking to Rom about what he should do, which plays out later on in the episode.
In a somewhat simplistic manner, Rom gathers his fellow workers, and there are a number of people for this small place, and says, "We should start a union.
Wouldn't you like to take a paid vacation?"
"You're being ridiculous."
"Answer the question."
"It's not gonna happen."
"It won't happen unless you make it happen. We're Ferengi. And when a Ferengi sees an opportunity, what does he do?"
"He seizes it?"
"That's right. And I, for one, intend to grab it. We've been exploited long enough. It's time to be strong. Take control of our lives, our dignity, and our profits."
"Yes." "Yeah."
"Strike a blow against Quark."
"Yes."
"Strike a blow against the FCA." "Yeah." "Strike a blow against exploitation."
"Yeah."
"Are you with me?"
Yeah, this is a really, really great example of agitation in the workplace and kind of how localized unions are formed within a workplace. People start to come together, talk about their issues, and realize that they're not alone. And so that's essentially what a union is. It's the recognition of the fact that we're not alone and we're all in the same boat, so we all have the same interest in that regard.
The funny thing about a union being organized in a Ferengi shop, though, is that the Ferengi are just so viscerally against unions and really kind of against the idea almost of escaping exploitation at all.
What you people need is a union.
You know, a trade guild, a collective bargaining association, a union. Something to keep you from being exploited.
You don't understand. Ferengi workers don't want to stop the exploitation. We want to find a way to become the exploiters.
Yeah, it's very much the American mentality of wanting to be the exploiter rather than the exploited, and not recognizing that maybe exploitation shouldn't be happening in the first place.
Well, yeah, Rom, you know, speaks out against exploitation, but also speaks for profits. And this is like kind of the central contradiction of capitalism in a lot of ways, but also of the labor movement.
Yeah, it's kind of been slowly imploding over the years because of that type of mentality where people are organizing individuals rather than organizing kind of as a class.
So what happens after they decide to form this union and present their demands to Quark?
Quark essentially just laughs in their faces, which I've personally seen bosses do when the workers kind of present their demands. They basically march on the boss, demanding certain things like paid time off and other things like that.
And they go on strike.
Yeah, and they essentially realize their strength is in crippling the commerce of Quark's bar.
Yeah, they form a picket line and they block access to one of the entrances, but per some agreement, which doesn't really come up until later, they were allowing access to another one so that station security wouldn't crack down on them.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because Odo, the head security officer who's charge of, you know, keeping order on the promenade where the bar is, he has this conversation with Quark, and when they basically – it's like the boss class meeting with the police officers, and even Odo says, you know, if you have to mob up to get whatever you want, it's not worth getting, which is, again, kind of a reinforcement of that American mentality that if you have to demand what you need, a need, that's somehow wrong.
Well, I hate to admit this, but I agree with you. From what Chief O'Brien tells me about strikes, they sound like trouble. I don't like mobs. In my opinion, if you need one to get what you want, it's not worth getting.
And even though Quark doesn't give in to their demands and, you know, tries to get by on holographic waiters, the Ferengi Commerce Authority eventually shows up wanting to put an end to the strike for them. And this, you know, becomes another fold in this vision of labor struggle. And it's kind of not clear whether the FCA is a state entity or really, as it kind of seems to me, to be like the parent corporation swooping down in on a franchise where the franchise owner, which will often be a self-professed like independent business person, is tarnishing the brand by not dealing with this strike.
Exactly. Like it's an affront to all Ferengi that this one owner can't keep his workers in line, which is very much what large corporations do when labor disputes happens. They always send somebody down from up top to try and solve it as quickly as possible without it kind of getting out to the press.
Yeah, and basically what it comes down to eventually is them threatening violence, which is what workers have always faced for trying to organize. But this is not before Quark tries to bribe Rom.
And that bribe is very, very classic of kind of union busting techniques. It's usually the first one is the extension of privileges to whoever they think is causing the issue. In this case, it would be the extension of money, extra money to Rom in order to call off the strike and dissolve the union. But of course, it doesn't work because he's currently in that scene reading all sorts of things about labor and money and trying to kind of self-educate him on what a struggle means and how to go about it.
Rom, can we talk about this?
There's only one thing I have to say to you. Workers of the world, unite! You have nothing to lose but your chains.
What's happened to you?
And this brings us, I think, to the real tragedy of the episode, which is that the union folds. And I was wondering if you could explain a bit about the tension between the contract and the union in this episode and in the labor movement in general.
I think in this episode, it was a way for Star Trek writers to talk about collective bargaining and maybe some of the pitfalls of it. Because in the episode, Quark and his brother eventually come to a resolution. And part of the terms of that resolution is the union dissolves itself. at least on paper. And that creates kind of a tension and a question at the end of the episode as well. Like, well, what happens once you don't work under a contract? Or if you do work under a contract, especially under somebody like a Ferengi, much like in our society or capitalist society, it's a way to walk backwards.
I mean, the episode has that early scene where Rom is quoting the very exact terms of their labor contract. Working under a contract doesn't necessarily actually mean good working conditions or autonomy or respect.
And also, from the way he describes the labor contract that he has, it sounds very, very long, like a very long contract. And I don't know about you, but every time I see a long contract, I'm wondering, well, where's the bad part in it? Because they're clearly trying to obscure it with a lot of words.
But that's not all. The Quark doesn't just come to this of his own accord.
Yeah, he's definitely pressured by Commander Sisko, who's the Federation officer in charge of running of the space station. And he kind of points out to Quark that they don't charge him rent. They've kind of built up this infrastructure that he profits off of. And so therefore, he should come to terms with his employees, which is very much kind of mirroring the nature of American labor and how that's negotiated, where the state, under the guidelines of the National Labor Relations Board, is essentially doing what Sisko does in the episode. He's forcing the boss back to the table. But sadly, that doesn't actually change the power relations at work. Even after it's resolved, it seems things just kind of go back to the way they were. And, you know, it is TV, so they're kind of limited in their exposition of it. That's essentially the kind of the state coming down and forcing the boss back to the table, even when he really doesn't want to be back at the table.
In the end, they get their demand, so we're told. It doesn't ever really come up in the show again, this dispute and whether it's been honored or not. But it's supposed to end with us feeling like everyone got the most that they could hope to get.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really interesting to see how that all plays out, especially because it's so perfectly American. The episode is so tailored to American understandings of labor, and I think that's why it's really, really valuable.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. I'm Joe Clement, and I've been talking with Dave, a local Star Trek and labor enthusiast, about the Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode called Bar Association, which raises the question of unions. You can find Star Trek Deep Space Nine on Netflix or at your local county library.